Welcome to the Build and Inspire podcast. We meet incredible people building amazing things, so you'll be inspired to build what you're passionate about.
Karen, I got to say, well, first of all, I mean, obviously, thank you, but thank you so much because you just got in from a flight 14, 16 hours from France.
Yeah, it's about 14 hours right on the spot. So that's why I have a big cup of coffee here to help me. I just got adjusted to the jet lag too. So yeah, it's good to be here. Anything, you know, for you, Leo, like our friendship means a lot to me.
I thank you. It means a lot to me too. And having you on is so special because you are, I mean, I don't even know. I should have like listed this out. You are professional, practitioner, author, professor, speaker. What am I forgetting there? Awesome friend, coffee drinker, right? You've done so much for social media, for the industry, just teaching, speaking, doing so many amazing things. So it's an honor to have you on the podcast.
I really appreciate that, Leo. No, I mean, it keeps me grounded, to be able to do all of these different things and to make an impact and help other professors, students, professionals. I mean, I feel life is too short. And so what better way to help everyone out? So, and it keeps me, you know, sane, I would say. Yeah. If I was doing just one thing, I think I would get bored out of my mind. So being able to kind of have all sorts of things going on, it keeps me, you know, energized, inspired, and caffeinated, powered.
Yes. So important. I think that's one of the reasons you and I get along so well too, because we just, I mean, besides our love for coffee, we're just kind of like doing and have our hands in like a million different little things. Like when people ask, what do you do? It's almost like, where do I start?
Or what am I doing today?
Yeah, that's even better. Well, actually, So let's jump right into it. You came from a really historic event that you helped launch.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Let's tell the audience about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just got back 14 hours ago from Cannes in, of course, Cannes, France. Mm-hmm. But I was at the Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity, and I was there for a couple reasons. One, because it's basically, as you know, like the Oscars for our industry.
Yep.
Basically, who's there in terms of brands, agencies, professionals. But I was there to launch, as you mentioned, a new event actually for educators. And so we had our own educator summit where it was meetups basically throughout the festival where we would be bringing in leading speakers from major platforms, brands, agencies to kind of talk about some growing areas that we as educators are interested and empowered in, that the overall goal was to help bridge the gap between education and practice. And so this was the first time that this event had been, you know, basically implemented. And so I was kind of the on the ground person to kind of coordinate, you know, the speakers, make sure everyone knew where we were going in terms of meetups. And so I was the co-chair, and along with my good friend, Bill Ward, we worked with Steve Latham, who's the head of talent at Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity. So he was our chair and fearless leader. He had an amazing scooter that he would just whip on by throughout the festival. I'm like, that is goals. But it really turned out to be a really amazing event. Just hearing back from the educators who were there, they were very inspired. They're like, wow, this is exactly an event that we need. And so we're already kind of making plans for 2020. So June 22nd to the 26th are the official Cannes Lions update. So we need to get you there, Leo, because
I'd love to be there. It's such an honor to be there.
So it was a lot of fun, very rewarding to kind of see, you know, an event kind of making an impact, because I think the thing that I was able to take away from Cannes is everyone's in the same boat. Industry professionals are saying we need more diverse talent, we need to explore what are the current issues and trends that are really, you know, important for us to kind of explore. We need to partner more together. So it was really, really refreshing to kind of hear that, but then also be able to talk to the industry folks and say, you know, all of those think that people talk about higher ed not being relevant. Here's, you know, a group of educators here basically who want to help and partner. And so there were a lot of really exciting collaborations and partnerships that were kind of, you know, fostered through that discussion. Like we had a panel with Facebook, LinkedIn, Adobe, and Pinterest.
Wow.
And Pinterest does not have a learning platform like Facebook Blueprint has or LinkedIn Learning. And so they said, well, we could include you guys in as part of the conversation. And so it was huge. But, you know, I had kind of all of my group of professors off the side because I had to moderate the panel. They were just kind of like internally geeking out. And I'm like, I know.
I'm geeking out right now. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, it was really cool. Really cool.
And you've pretty much been on the forefront of connecting professionals and students and educators pretty much your whole career. You also run a really popular Facebook community.
Yeah.
That I'm also luckily a part of. And I was actually just checking on it earlier and I'm like, I just love the engagement you're getting. It's such, like, not only is it quality, you have quantity too. Like, there's a lot of really good engagement in there.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you for being part of this too, Leo, because I know when we first connected on Twitter and you mentioned how much you wanted to help, you know, educators, students to kind of, again, bridge that partnership. And that's something that, you know, we both are very passionate about. And I remember introducing you, like, I think there was like digital, like, fanfare. Like, you have kind of this fan group that's going on with the educators. They're like, Leo is amazing. I'm like, I know. Hashtag Team Leo. So we haven't decided what our fan group will be called for you, but
I'm blushing.
And Sabrina and all, like, we'll figure out a name. But, oh, yeah, the professors group in October will be 3 years old, but it really kind of fostered a need because talking with other professors, going to other conferences, they feel like, you know, I don't really feel like I'm with my people, like people that social media. And so this group has been something where we can all kind of come together, share resources. And I've had a couple of conversations actually with some of the educators at Cannes Lions. And one of the professors said, yeah, I came here because I saw what you've been doing with this Facebook group. And I saw that you were tied with this summit. And I realized, okay, if Karen is involved, it's going to be good. And so I was like, well, okay, that's a little pressure, but I was honored. But yeah, no, I mean, I love the engagement. I love the fact too, Leo, that so many people are sharing their ideas and virtually mentoring each other.
Yeah.
I feel we don't do enough of that in academia. I really don't. And then we have so many professionals involved. And as of right now, I think we have 10 people from Facebook, like specifically with the Blueprint team.
Yeah.
You know, because I told them they, you know, they're launching their new certification in 2020. And they said, you know, I met them in a conference in St. Louis the conference was the Midwest Digital Marketing Conference run by Perry Drake, who's amazing. Very thankful for Perry for inviting me this year. And Facebook Blueprint was there and they said, well, we're having a hard time kind of reaching professors who teach social media. And I just pulled up my phone. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Thousands. Yeah. And now we got to get Pinterest people in there.
Right. Yes. Pinterest. Yeah. I mean, I did tell them I spend way too much time on Pinterest looking at something. But it's also dangerous when, like, I'm hungry. I'm like, ooh, I want to make this and this. And then,
yeah. No, I do love the collaboration in there is so amazing. I remember when I first started teaching and thankfully because of you, introducing me to West Virginia University and all the other amazing professors. You're the reason I teach. And I was in there and everyone's just super, super nice. And like you said, like supportive. I probably have never been, and I mean this, part of a more supportive, like tight-knit group where I feel like I know these folks and I've never met like maybe 98% of them in real life. And just everything they have to share is just so great.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure that the, you know, group would be really appreciative and very thankful to hear that because that's the overall goal here is to be able to have a place where people feel that their voice matters.
You're right.
And if they have a question, and I've really tried to help a few professors who kind of have been thrown, like, let's say, a social media class when they first walk onto campus, like after they finish their doctoral programs or they are brought in to be a professor of practice, and they're just like, I have no idea where to start.
Yeah.
You know,
Let's open Facebook.
Yeah. Well, and I feel too that I'm trying to do something. Like if I always keep in the back of my mind, whether I'm teaching or mentoring someone or creating this Facebook group, I've always kind of asked myself, what would I have wanted at this stage, you know, in the game? And when I started teaching social, like back in 2011, Leo, there was nothing. And I remember I was hired on for Louisville to basically create a social media class. And I remember spending that first year thinking, okay, how is it going to be structured? What are the readings? What are the courses? I got a lot of doors slammed in my face from other professors. They were like, no, this is my class. These are my resources. Go talk to someone else. And in the back of my mind, I'm like thinking, okay, I will make sure, like, I will never do that, you know, in my career. And so I kind of been on the opposite end of the continuum. Like, hey,
of course.
So,
and it's never hurt you once, right? Like, there is ROI in giving, and people sometimes come from this place of scarcity, and there is no scarcity here. Like, we're all here in it together, supporting. There's enough an audience out there, like, to support one another. And like, even from like, let's just make it completely selfish. Why wouldn't I want to learn? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I want it? I could be part of your group and get better myself.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel no-brainer.
Yeah, I feel with social, digital, marketing, or any of these fields, like, we really can't know every single aspect.
No, it's impossible.
And so there's so many different disciplines represented. Like, I look at Scott Coley and Lynn Humphrey, for example. These are two amazing professors who are doing some really cool research into certifications. Mm-hmm. They come in from a marketing standpoint, so they have a certain criteria and curriculum that they need to follow.
Yeah.
So I look to them saying, okay, what are they doing that I could maybe get inspired by for my own classes that are kind of more PR-based?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel there's just so much room to grow and learn from each other. But I feel that the way that we can do that is kind of foster that community, making sure that everyone feels welcome.
Yeah.
But we're all on the same team here. We want the best for our students. So
exactly. So if you don't want to be a part of it, it just boggles my mind. And truthfully, I think the same thing for almost anything, even as marketing professionals, influencers. You and I talk a lot about this, though, too. Influencers not wanting to maybe like other people's content or be involved or collaborate. I'm like, this just raises the tide. Like, again, there's no scarcity. Like, don't come from a place of scarcity. There's so much to go around, so many amazing opportunities to do. And as I think back through my career too, I'm like, I couldn't do anything without a team and people above me on the side of me. Like, I don't know how I would do anything in my life without my friends and professional acquaintances. It just boggles my mind.
Yeah, you kind of have to have your tribe, essentially. Yeah. You got to have a group of people that you can go to that will be there to support you, that will be able to help out, bounce around ideas, brainstorm, and or just even talk about, like, hey, is this something that you're experiencing? And or kind of talk about current, you know, current topics that we're both interested, like, as you said, influencer marketing. I feel like with your expertise and how many talks you've given on this topic, I can say, Leo, what do you think about, you know, let's say the Fyre Festival, or what do you think are the real trends here that we have to be aware of? So I agree. Like, we can do our own thing, but at the same time, we also need people that we can kind of grow and be in that circle of trust. And so I love Meet the Parents. I love Robert De Niro. So whenever people get circle of trust, I'm like, you kind of have to have a group of people that, or, you know, a community that you're able to kind of bounce around ideas, help each other. And I've always wanted to be a resource for someone that if they have questions or any concerns or, you know, basically challenges, that they can always come to me and say, yeah, okay, like, here's how I would solve it, or here's some things,
figure it out.
Here's some resources. And people are indebted. People are really grateful for that. So I feel that it, in one small way, changing one aspect of the field, I mean, I hope I can be able to help out and address that. So
no, definitely. I've had, I mean, obviously I say it myself, but I have so many people that I've met that just absolutely love you and everything you're doing for the industry. And really what's interesting is you were a sports star at university. And then did you always think that you were going to go into marketing and social media, especially, or crisis or PR, any, like, was this in the back of your mind the whole time or?
No, I actually didn't know that PR was a real field until I got to Florida. It's interesting. I've always known, though, like, I wanted to be a teacher. Like, ever since I think I remember I was like in fifth grade that I said, yes, this is what I'm going to do. But I just didn't know in what. Both my parents you know, taught. My dad was in marketing for years. He did work for Nestle, Mars, and then he taught marketing and accounting. But my mom's still a professor.
Sorry, I'm gonna have to stop you. I gotta say, we gotta give your dad a shout out. He is, I've not yet to meet him, and I can't wait. He's just super cool, and he's always liking things and commenting. And I actually, we gotta give him a shout out. He's
thank you.
Awesome, and I've only met him on Facebook.
Well, I think he would, you know, he's a fan of what you did at Oreo. I remember he commented about that when he saw the Super Bowl. He's like, that's really innovative. And so now I can say, well, here's Leo. He's, you know, one of the members of the brilliant team. So it would be great for you to meet him.
I can't wait. Sorry, everyone's like, all right, this is going to be two now. Like, Leo, shut up.
No, it's all good. Yeah, but my mom teaches neuroscience, so a completely different area. So she gets to talk about, like, serotonin levels, brain worms, all the stuff that, like, my students are like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like, well, I don't get to talk about that. But, in track, I did 10 years of track and field. So in high school, actually before that, in 1995, so I'm dating myself a little bit, I was 13. And actually, my parents have always been very innovative when it comes to technology. They made sure that we got, like, the old school now, like Apple computers and, you know.
The big gray ones with the...
Oh, yes. Iconic. Yeah. So, but when I was 13, my parents gave my sisters and I each our own domain name, you know, because of...
Wow. That is really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, I share this story with my students because they're always worried about their first website or blog. Uh-huh. They're like, I don't want to embarrass myself online or do anything stupid. And I tell them, no, they can never embarrass themselves as much as I do when I share this story. My very first website before KarenFreeberg.com existed, it was a fan site for the actor Val Kilmer. So I just saw Top Gun. And so I tell my students, like, yeah, Top Gun. Now they're like, oh, that old movie. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So sad. But then I shifted over to actually use it as a personal branding site to market myself as a student athlete, to college coaches. Wow. I grew up in a small town.
That's really innovative.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I it was out of necessity because at that time, I grew up in a small town in California, in San Luis Obispo, and I figured what better way to let college coaches know about my journey, what I am able to do, both in track and off the field. And so it was kind of my early stages of blogging. I had my own newsletter, so it was a lot of fun. And so, I was able to do also pretty well in high school. I missed the national record in the shot put by 1/4 inch. So still that. I went to Florida. I spent 3 years there. I did get a back injury my junior year. It was during the Olympic trials, but I was able to use that extra eligibility for USC. But it was actually at Florida where I first was thinking, oh, I'm going to go into pre-med. That didn't work. So then I went to psychology. I thought, oh, I'm going to do psychology and a business minor. But it was actually my academic athletic advisor at Florida who said, you know, she was looking at what I was doing on track, and I was doing early stages blogging. I had my newsletter, my website. She said, Karen, why don't you go into PR? And I remember asking her, I'm like, well, one, what is PR? And two, like the second question I had was, is it a real major? Because at Florida, there were certain athletes that had real majors, but then there were others that were kind of questionable.
Sure.
So I wanted to make sure that, you know, as I was kind of moving forward to my goal to be a teacher, professor, I wanted to make sure that I was in a field that made sense. So she said, no, like Florida actually has a really good PR program. So I took my first class, and the rest is history, Leo. And just, I love the field. It's grown. And like, I've always been passionate about technology. I try to use it as much as I can. So I tell my students I have three weaknesses: coffee, tech, and shoes. You can't have too much of either of them. So
I love that. Love it. Love it. And then how soon after did you go to South Africa? Because I remember you were a practitioner in South Africa doing crisis management and such. Was it soon after that, or?
I did it for 4 months in between my master's and my PhD. So USC, for their master's program, was top notch. I got my MA in strategic public relations. And one of the things that really attracted me about USC was the fact that this program encouraged students in the program to take an international internship.
Okay.
And you could go to either London, Hong Kong, or Cape Town. And I could not do it my first year because I was still competing in track. I still had nationals and all of that you know, still left. And so I was kind of bummed. I thought, man, I'm not going to be able to take advantage of this opportunity. But my advisor at SC said, no, well, you could, you know, you're going to still need to take classes to graduate, you know, because usually you have to take summer classes. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they didn't have online classes at SC. And so she said, you could take the summer afterwards and kind of use that buffer to transition it to, you know, your PhD. And so I thought, cool. So I talked to a few of my friends, and I had a lot of friends that went the year before to South Africa, and they said, you will get a lot of hands-on experience in South Africa. And that's what really I wanted, because I had done a couple of, you know, internships and experiences. I worked at an internship in Florida before I graduated. But at SC, I did work within the athletic department, helping out with recruiting and digital communications. But I felt like I need an agency. I need some kind of real world experience. So I chose South Africa because I figured, too, I'm like, I've never been. I had a few teammates that went, you know, competed for the South African team. So I thought, why not? So talking to my parents and saying, yes, I'm going to go to South Africa for 4 months and work. And they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But yeah, they encouraged me and they really supported me in that. So I worked in an agency called Total Media.
Okay.
They were an agency that was owned by Weber Shandwick. Mm-hmm. And they specialized in fashion and consumer PR. So as I tell my students, like my background, that is the one thing they're like, oh my gosh, you got to work with fashion designers and award shows. And I'm like, yeah, but I said, you know that movie Devil Wears Prada? Yeah. So there were a couple of really fun learning experiences for me. I mean, was the biggest one for me, like being able to go down there. I was thrown in immediately. So they did do some crisis management down there, but a lot of it was kind of promotions, networking, early stages of influencer marketing per se. They did it more kind of like blogger relations.
Sure.
But one of the coolest things that I was able to do, I mean, I was kind of at the bottom of the totem pole, you know, basically for this agency. The second day, I was asked to kind of collect some materials for an upcoming boutique launch that was happening in Cape Town. It was to feature Prada, and Prada at that time had never been featured anywhere else or available in store in South Africa. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. I love Prada.
Good deal.
But my boss at the time handed me this really long number, and I'm thinking, why am I getting handed this really long number? But it was a telephone number, and she said, yeah, I want you to call this person at Prada in Milan. And I looked at it, I'm like, what? So I actually had to talk to the fashion director in Prada Milan to make sure that we were able to get all the visual materials that we needed for our media kits, for the website and the official launch. And I just remember being on the phone thinking, this is crazy. This is like really amazing. Mm-hmm. But I would not have had that experience probably anywhere else. But really kind of what I also liked about being in South Africa is I got to learn about the culture.
Sure, I got
to meet some incredible people that I still am connected with thanks to social media, but it really gave me an opportunity to push myself to really kind of grow as a person. And I came back completely changed, and I started the PhD program two weeks later at Tennessee.
Wow.
So so it was quite a whirlwind, but one changes for the world.
That's amazing. There's obviously, mentorship and teaching is so important, but there's also something to be said about just being pushed into the deep end of the pool. And that's how I pretty much learned my first job. And during the time I was stressed out and like hated it. But now I'm like, thank God, it made me much more resourceful and just being able to learn how to do the bad things that I shouldn't be doing and the good things. That's amazing. That's an amazing story. So then you started, then when did you start at Louisville? Louisville?
I started in fall of 2011. So I started doing the job searching process 2010 to 2011, because you usually do that the year before you end up with your dissertation and you defend and you become a PhD. So I looked at the Louisville job, and what intrigued me about it was really the first job that actually said, okay, you're going to be an assistant professor in strategic communications, mm-hmm. Instead of just being in public relations. And I remember at that time in the community of PR, that was looked at as being like, oh, that's not PR. You're really going against the field. And I'm thinking, no, that's kind of what we do. Sure. So, and I feel like that's always been a tendency for me, Leo. It's like when everyone's going this way, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go that way.
So, that's a good thing.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to go this way, you know, but yeah, I've been at Louisville. This will be my 8th year and I love it. It's been the best of all worlds, combined great colleagues, great culture. The students mm-hmm. are amazing. The city is fantastic in terms of the accessibility and just the blend between you have big business here, but then you also have the feeling where you're like, okay, I can kind of take a break mm-hmm. and kind of collect my thoughts, be somewhere quiet. And we do have, we're known for bourbon and fried chicken yes. and horses. So, so there's a lot of things surrounded by all of those areas. So
amazing. And Yum Brands is headquartered there, right?
Yeah. Yum Brands, Texas Roadhouse, which I don't get. Mm. I mean, I feel, that's one that I'm kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Papa John's, of course, Brown-Forman that oversees all the bourbon. Mm. We have lots of bourbon. I actually, you mentioned earlier crisis communications. I actually got myself into a bit of a crisis when I first started.
Let's hear about it.
Well, I'm not, I know this is going to be controversial, but I'm not a bourbon drinker. So I know brands, but I didn't know that there were so many brands. So I remember talking to my students. I'm like, yeah, you know, you guys have bourbon like Maker's Marker, like one time in class. And you would imagine, like, if you saw the reactions of the students, Leo, that I would have said like, okay, you have like a 30-page paper due tomorrow. Like they were, and then they were like, Karen, we need to give you bourbon. 101 here. So I'm like, okay, well, teach me. And so since then, you know, thanks to great friends like, you know, Jason Falls, who's like my bourbon expert, you know, whenever I'm looking to get bourbon gifts, I'm like, Jason, is this a good bourbon?
What do I need? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like I'm better now after the experience. So
that's amazing. I have a similar story. I was at a party and someone gave me Pap Van Winkle, is it?
Oh my God. My dad would literally like, that is the one brand that he literally is like, do you have Pappies? I'm like, no, it's like over $1,000 a bottle.
Yeah. So I didn't know this at all. And someone handed it to me. I almost got kicked out of the party. Someone handed it to me. I took a little sip and I'm like, can I get some Coca-Cola? And everyone, like, I swear everyone, those like five people in front of me, they all turned around like with their jaws completely dropped. I'm like, like, do you know how much that is? I'm like, Nope.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, I totally understand. Yeah. So, but if it was coffee, then if you said it was like the prime example of coffee, then I would be like, okay, Leah, what's
going on? Yeah, then we know. We could talk about it all day long.
Yeah. But yeah, Pappies, yeah, is definitely kind of actually another interesting side note, kind of segue a little bit away. But there was an interesting crisis that happened a few years ago in Louisville. It was called Pappygate. There were
heard of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone was watching and talking about that in Louisville. Yeah. Like, oh gosh, can you believe that all these cases of Pappy were stolen? And they eventually got the people.
They thought it was an inside job, right?
Yeah, it was an inside job. Yeah.
Oh, it was an inside job. They figured it out.
I think it was a couple of people. But yeah, I mean, all my students were talking about it. Like, oh my gosh, this is a tragedy. This is a catastrophe. And I'm like, it's bourbon. And so then they were kind of like, okay, well, obviously you don't drink bourbon. And I'm like, no, but I understand. I appreciate it. Let's talk about the crisis.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So yeah, but Kentucky loves their bourbon.
Oh yes. It's such a big deal. It's everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Yeah. You've been to Louisville several times. And so yeah, like you can see like bourbon is like everywhere. It's in our airport. We have a bourbon bar in the second level.
That's amazing.
Airport. And so we actually have a couple of bourbon bars inside the basketball arena. So people, you know, traditionally they have beer that they serve. We have bourbon.
Yeah. Amazing. Of course, the fried chicken. I feel like every time I go there and I come back, I'm like sweating fried chicken. I love it so much, especially hot chicken.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to go to a few good places to eat. I think you got to go to, I'm having a senior moment. I remember like...
Oh, no worries. I don't remember the names either, but you took me to a bunch of places that were just fantastic. Yeah. I remember telling the story, like you and I went and I'd like go back like 10 minutes later when everyone was gone. I'm like, can we get some more fried chicken? It's well, that good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with fried chicken. And yeah, we definitely have a lot of that. Here, so
that's amazing. So... You started teaching, mm-hmm. and you're now a published author as well, social media book. And that came out about a year and a half now, 2 years?
It'll be a year in August. Yeah. So, I started writing that book about a year and a half before, just because I felt with some of the books out there, they weren't really addressing some of the things that I thought were necessary mm-hmm. in the classroom. So I always tell my friends, like, I always felt like I was like Goldilocks. I'm like, this book is based on theory, or this book doesn't cover, you know, enough and walking people through the process of teaching social media. Mm-hmm. But before that, I actually did a workbook on kind of like self-published on Amazon. And that one kind of was like my first kind of delve into the publishing world. I thought mm-hmm. I'm going to assign a book that, you know, basically, you know, kind of talks about how I teach social.
Yeah.
It was like a $10 book, you know, so nothing kind of expensive, but I was shocked, Leah, with how that book just skyrocketed. I did not know how useful people thought it was. And so I thought at that time, that was published in 2016. So I thought, okay, maybe, you know, this could be something that I could do like mm-hmm. as a formal traditional textbook, venture. But I actually, years before, like I had submitted proposals, but I kept getting rejected back because mm-hmm. the publisher said, we don't really need a social media book because once it's printed, it's out of date. So,
yeah.
But Sage, I pitched the idea with them, but I said I really wanted to write a book that focused on the how and why we use social to kind of mm-hmm. build on the fundamental strategy mm-hmm. and skills.
Because that never changes.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, it came out in last August, so it'll be a year old in 2018. I feel like it's like almost like my academic child. You know, it's like I mean, I feel like when I saw it first in print, I was like holding it. Like I'm like, okay, I'm ready. Like this is very special to me.
No, that's amazing.
But I want to thank you too, Leah, for the kind video review that you did.
Oh, of course.
Really appreciate that. That meant a lot. So just
no, I'm happy to do it, and I wouldn't do it if it wasn't good. Like honestly, so yeah, we need that, and I love that because so many people do say, "How do you teach social media?" And you hit it right on the head when you say, like, maybe I don't teach, or you don't teach, or anybody whoever's teaching social media doesn't teach on like this is Facebook and click this button or anything. Facebook may not be around in the next 10 years. You know what I mean? There's going to be something brand new that's going to pop up tomorrow, but the how and why will always be there. How to choose channels, right? How to engage with audiences, mm-hmm. when, why, all that kind of good stuff. You teach that.
Thank you.
And that's amazing.
Well, I look at writing papers, like academic papers, differently because I used to think, oh my gosh, 20 pages, I have to write this article. Now I'm like,
sure.
Like not a problem.
Yeah.
I'll have to write several chapters like that were like beyond 20 pages. Like, I got this.
How long did it take you to write the whole book? Well, how long would it take you to write one chapter?
It depends on the chapter.
Okay, true.
Yeah, I would say there were certain chapters that I wrote that were like done very quickly. I would say the hardest and longest that it took me to write a chapter was about a month and a half.
Okay.
And that's my ethics and legal chapter. So that was like chapter two.
More research.
It was actually my shortest chapter too. Oh,
wow.
But yeah, no, and I'm not someone that, you know, is an expert in law or ethics, but I felt that I really needed to do the research necessary to kind of delve in deep, you know, to kind of figure out, okay, what are the legal ethical challenges, opportunities here in social. So, but I would say the easiest chapter for me was the strategic planning. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I realized, Leo, about writing books was there were some things that I had never really written down, but only have talked about, like in class. So like my strategic planning textbook, chapter, what had happened was I was kind of struggling a little bit. I'm like, okay, why is it taking me so long to write this down? And I realized my mind was thinking a lot faster than how I was typing.
Yeah, I see.
So I actually went on Google Docs, turned on the voice, you know, dictation, mm-hmm. and just did a lecture, you know.
Smart.
Yeah, so then afterwards I had all of my notes. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
There it is. No, I love that idea. I've done similar things too, where I just need to get something out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the type of writer when you start writing? Do you edit while you write, or because I don't, I just write and then
I just later. Yeah. So what I do is I get everything on down on paper, and then I usually take a break. Like what I've tried to do is I actually have a couple of alarms that go off, like when I'm working on my book. This is okay. Mm-hmm. You can get up. Also, my watch reminds me, like, you've been sitting too long. I'm like, okay. Yeah, okay. So I usually do some sort of exercise. I feel like that's been kind of like my outlet and something that helps me clear my head. And then I feel like refreshed when I come back. And then there's times when I come back, you know, to my writing, whatever I wrote, I look at it, I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, this is not good. I thought this was good. But then there are other times I was like, wow.
Who wrote this?
Right.
Did I write this?
Yeah. Like, did I write this? Like, that was really good.
That's awesome.
So I usually write and then edit, but I have to do that certain points of the day because there's like my writing time. I love writing in the morning. That's kind of when I'm fresh. But if you saw me doing any kind of writing after like 9 o'clock at night, it would not be good.
Yeah. I listening to everything from comedians to authors of fiction and nonfiction. A lot of them generally say like, if they could get an hour's worth of writing a day, mm-hmm. that's a lot.
Oh yeah.
Like, they're like, success.
Yeah. Oh, I've had my one sentence days. And I mean, I've even shared that with my students who have advised, whether it's for master's theses or even dissertations. I mean, I ran into that with my dissertation process at the University of Tennessee, where there would be some days where I'm like, I'm on a roll. I'm like, yes, I'm able to sit down and just write. But then there were other days where I wrote a sentence and closed my book and said, that's it for today. So I actually have try to bring what I used to do in track as a student athlete, that kind of time management, focused, and work ethic, and try to translate that to what I'm doing right now as a professor, author, and consultant. So it's worked out really well. So
amazing. Yeah, I always fear, you and I have talked about this offline too, like if I ever try writing something, I'm like, I have, like, it scares me. I'm like, 100 words? I can't do it. I can write a tweet.
Well, I'm going to say it on record for your listeners and for everyone. I definitely think if anyone, you can write a book and that would be absolutely successful, that would be a bestseller, it would be you, Leah. Like, you have a way with communicating very complex topics and really drilling it down to a memorable and very applicable way. And hearing you speak, you interject your personality in a very nice way that people feel like they can relate to you as an author. Like, you're a real person. Because I, to be honest, like, there's some authors that I met that I'm like, I really don't know you as a person. Like, do you like things? You know, what are things? And so I feel that you have a very nice bridge in interjecting your expertise, which you have a ton of. I mean, you were part of the Oreo tweet that viral, like a classic case study that I always go through in all of my classes. But you also have a way to really make yourselves relatable and very personable to people that feel like it's like, I wouldn't say that you're like a unicorn, but it's in the industry, but I mean, you don't see that often. So, thank you. Again, as I mentioned, you have a huge fan base in the educator community. Literally, like, I mean, we're kind of
I'm honored. I mean, it means so much to me being able to like support and help. And thank you for saying that. That means I'm like probably so red right now. I'm behind this weight. So that's the other part. Did you become a speaker before the book? Were you always kind of like in the speaking world, or did it kind of start with the book?
I would say that, I mean, the speaking that I would do would be not as frequent, you know? So I always, took up opportunities. My very first speaking engagement was at, I was at the University of Tennessee. I did a very small workshop on crisis communications and social media for a group of CEOs that were in town. And they found me because of my blog and my website.
Yeah.
So what I did during my doctoral program is I told myself, okay, do some, academic talks, go to academic conferences, of course, because that's kind of important, for the CV and professional career. But I always wanted to have at least one or two professional-based speaking engagements, whether it was to PRSA or a local chapter or something that I could put on my resume that could show that I had that industry connection. So while I was at Louisville, like, I still kind of took that same approach, but I thought, okay, that could be where my summers come in. Like, if the time, because it's difficult to kind of take a step away, from, the semester, because I teach in the spring, Monday and Friday. And so unless it's like an event on Tuesday, that I'm able to get in and out, it's really difficult. So I would say before the book, you know, I had, you know, definitely some consistent speaking engagements. I'd say afterwards, people are like, oh, okay, yeah, like we want you to be here. We want you to do this. So as you're kind of building your personal brand, you're able to, you know, get more opportunities. And so I'm really grateful for that. I'm really grateful. So I will be doing a few more talks in the fall.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Oh, so for the audience, one is in New York, right?
Yes, one is in New York. It is the social media, social media summit, mm-hmm. and it's a higher education track. And so I'll actually be talking about influencer marketing. So it'll be in October.
Really fantastic. Excited. I will be there. So anybody listening to this right now, please come.
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be great.
We all could hang out, get some coffee. So maybe
yes. It's been a while since I've been to New York, so I will definitely be looking at you for like recommendations. I'll be like, okay, where do I need to go?
we're gonna have a good time in New York. It's gonna be fun. And what's the other speech?
It is gonna be actually a local talk. I'm being brought in as one of the keynote speakers. It's actually for a group of realtors. Oh, and so this was an interesting, you know, kind of find because they found me. Because I had talked a little bit about how different businesses use social media, and they said, well, we're having a conference here in Louisville, and it's going to be at one, I think, the Brown Hotel. Okay. So somewhere, you know, like pretty iconic here in Louisville. And they said, yeah, we'd love for you to, you know, speak to us. And it was on a Tuesday, so I wasn't teaching. I'm like, yeah, like, let me, you know, run over the details. Let's go for it. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about my book as well. So they're actually going to work and having a few copies on, you know, on available at the conference. So
that's super exciting.
Yeah. So that's a first for me. So I was really excited. So it'll be a local one, but I'm really honored to have been asked.
No, of course. And real estate is such a big, I know very, very, very little from like a business perspective for real estate, but I've seen things from like an ancillary perspective and how awesome they are putting houses on social mm-hmm. media, giving virtual tours, like paid media mm-hmm. for them. It's like a no brainer. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's such a fantastic, awesome space.
Well, there's so much opportunities, like with even paid ads. Like if you know that there's people like certain times that are looking for houses, you could target ads. I actually was talking to my realtor who's the husband of one of my colleagues actually at the University of Louisville. And he was actually the person that showed me around, the city kind of picking up real estate. And so I went to him when I was kind of thinking, oh, I want to buy a house. And so we were talking a little bit. He kind of sat down and he's like, okay, I know you're my realtor and everything, but I'm like, do you want some, you know, points of advice? He's like, yes, you know, I'd like to know what I could do. Cause he does certain things and then, you know, he's not on Instagram. And so I'm like, well, it's, what you do is very visual. So yes, you
need 100%. No, it's a perfect spot for it. That's super cool. Something you and I also talk about, and I think it really connects with the community that you have on Facebook. Sometimes being a speaker is, I mean, I love it. And it's the part that I love the most. I get to be up on stage and talk and share and connect with people. But sometimes it is hard being up there because you're only able to talk in like, I guess sometimes like sound bites.
Yeah.
Right. So I love the connection. Like you have a community that people could then go and engage with you and other like-minded people. So after you're done speaking, like, oh my gosh, I love that she said X, Y, Z, and I need to learn more about this. They could then go to your community.
Yeah.
And like understand and be part of the nuance of it all.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel too, what I've always tried to do is walk away like with at least some resources or tips, you know, so people can kind of soak in. Because I feel that people are always craving for more. And I always kind of look at any talk as kind of a starting point where this is just like, whether it's 30 minutes or 20 minutes or even an hour, there's really not enough time to have a long standing conversation. So let's continue on this conversation. Just say, hey, how can we connect? How we can kind of move forward. And I know like that's what you've done, that you really have provided clear examples, case studies. And I think too, what I like about what you've done, Leo, too, is you always are very approachable of reaching out saying, hey, how can I connect with you on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram? And you of course give great plugs for Truth, who
is Truth Pug.
Truth Pug, yes, hashtag. she's kind of in the same, you know, kind of stratosphere as Anna Wintour. You know, she's an icon. So I definitely think that, she is. So she has a following in our group too. So she's doing a great job, you know, and it's really kind of being accessible. And I think that's really, really important for our industry.
Yeah, because we, you know, I've talked a lot about this. You leave talks where people are like, how to be good in social media is to be engaging. It's like, to be successful in business, sell more product. I'm like, thanks. I didn't know that.
Right.
I didn't know I had to sell, make money to be in business.
Right. Yes. I love, I've gone to a few talks where I kind of walk away thinking, did I really learn anything? I mean, there's, and what I try to do too, Leo, is like, I've tried to list a group of speakers that I can, you know, basically share with my students saying, okay, these are like really good speakers, because I've been to a few conferences now where there's some speakers that you see online and you're like, wow, like they have this demo reel. They have like lots of engagement, you know, on social, they have books and everything. And some of them are like absolutely how they are online. They're great. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. And so they become dear friends of mine. But then there's others I've been to where I'm like, am I experiencing a modern version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Because this is not what I'm seeing here online.
Of course.
So it's really important to kind of have that. As you said with speaking, it's also important to kind of have that consistency with how you present yourself online.
Mm-hmm.
Offline. And so I've tried to emphasize that even with my students. And so a lot of them feel like, well, I don't know if I can connect with my professor on social. Is that professional? And I said, well, I'm exactly what you see online. Like I will be reading lots. I will be sharing copy gifts. I will, you know, talk about The Rock. There's just a lot there, you know? So, but I think just being approachable and accessible and consistent is really important.
Agreed. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and although to add to everything you're saying, it's also like tiring to be someone else. Why would I want to have a different persona? Like that just, that seems hard.
It is. Yeah, no. And I think too, what's also hard is trying to be someone you're not. I mean, in a way where you feel, okay, the industry example is you have to be here. And you do see that with certain people that feel like, okay, I got to hustle 24/7 because that's what Gary Vaynerchuk promotes. But in fact, Gary is in his own class. Like
He's a celebrity.
Yeah. And what can you do that's different? Are there things you can learn from him that you feel like, okay, here's what I like. Here's what are things that may not work for me, that you can always learn something for anybody. But I do feel that there's this pressure on social to always be on, or always be like this box where you have to say, this is the only way that I can present myself, or this is how all marketers, PR, digital, social people have to be. And in fact, like the best version of ourselves is being ourselves.
Exactly. It comes through and people see, and people could tell that authenticity and the people want someone who's genuine to, you don't want someone who's fake. It comes through like old style 80s salespeople, like, hey, what's up? What are you guys doing? Like, you don't know that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of a few examples. I'm like, there's a few of those that are just very, very artificial. And I think with how people view social right now, transparency and being authentic and being real is, you know, so important, just because people have that kind of already predisposition to kind of think of it, oh, it's picture perfect, or you have this picture perfect, you know, life. And it's like, you know, share what's going on, you know, share like, you know, hey, you know, we've had these challenges, or hey, this is something that I'm really excited about. So what I mean, one personal rule that I have is always be positive, and because I feel that life is too short, you know. So.
Agreed. And I strive for transparency too. Like, you've seen my talks where I have pictures of me and my big hair and all that kind of good stuff. I'm like,
I love that. That is just so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah, because I want the person in the audience who's sitting there thinking to themselves, because we all have negative thoughts that go through our heads and things like, I can't do it, like maybe because of XYZ. I'm like, if I could do it with this big hair being from New Jersey, you're fine.
I've shared for some of my personal branding talks, I've done that kind of outline, you know, like, okay, what's my personal brand? So I have a picture of myself with coffee, of course. Mm-hmm. Then I talk a little bit about my work, but then I always share a competition throw picture of myself. Wow. And I have to say, shoppers do not take the most glamorous pictures. I mean, for 10 years, I mean, I was convinced that the photographers were out there to get the worst photo. I'm like, really? There's just like, the runners
doing.
Well, funny story. In Florida, it was in 2004, because I remember this because it's like ingrained in my brain. At Florida, I was able to finish sixth in the national championships for college, but ESPN and AP were there. So I actually was on ESPN for a moment. I was like, wow. Oh my God, that's so cool. So, but yeah, I was a bit competitive, a bit kind of angry, you know, so yeah, it was just kind of
passionate.
Yeah, very passionate, yes. But there was a picture that was taken, and it ended up being on Yahoo's most popular photos that were featured. Because it looked, I mean, I don't have a picture of it, Leo, but it was the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
But then, our Gainesville, Florida, that's where University of Florida is located, in their homepage, like, my picture was on the front. I mean, this picture, it was so scary. And I remember my intro to communications professor, it was a mass lecture. He brought the paper, mm-hmm. and he said when he got it, his niece, at the time they were, it was over the weekend, and so they were all together for a family event. His niece got really scared, and he had to say, no, no, she's really a nice student. And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
So, you were like walking the streets of Gainesville and people are crossing the street. And
yeah, they're going, well, even with my students, they Google me. They kind of look and say, okay, who's this professor that we have for intro? And a few years ago when I first came to Louisville, a few of my students found it and they were petrified. They were like, oh my God, our professor is going to like throw things at us. I'm like,
yeah.
But then, I mean, I've never had any issue though in class.
Yeah. So, I love it. That's a great story. I love, like, even like you said earlier, and this story and the story you said earlier about you being an athlete and thinking like, how do I get into this? Or what is this thing, right? So someone sitting or listening to this right now, hopefully, is thinking the same thing. They could be, I don't know, a chef, or they could be an athlete or whatever, something that's not in marketing, and say, wow, if she did it, then I could do it as well, right? Like, there's a path.
Yeah, I mean, and I think with athletes, I mean, I got some more hands-on learning experiences than anything else.
Oh, I bet.
Because you had to be, of course, good on media. Like, on, you had to basically make sure that you weren't saying or doing things on camera or on the record. That, even though the journalists, they're there for a story, and so there's always times where like, oh, what do you think about this competitor? I'm like,
yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Not going to do it, but... I would say the other lesson that I learned too early age was personal branding and even dealing with cyberbullying. My very first experience with cyberbullying was actually on a track and field website when I was a teenager at 14. And people say some very interesting things you know, like behind a screen. And so so that was kind of a wake-up call. I was like, wow, okay, I didn't realize that people would do this. And so I try to emphasize those lessons, you know, for my students, you know. Sure. But yeah, I mean, any place that you're at, whether it's, you know, chefs, I mean, I have a lot of students who are working their way through school. So a lot of them have worked in restaurants. I'm like, you're talking about really awesome customer service skills. You know what to do and what not to do. So definitely emphasize that. That's a key thing that we have to do in social and digital. But we also have other, you know, students who are working, you know, in other capacities. I'm like, you're learning time management and responsibility. So those are key things too. So there's some overall skills and, expectations that they can definitely bring and apply to specific jobs in marketing and social.
Yeah, I love that. One of my classes at WVU had a bunch of nursing students, and I love engaging with folks that aren't in marketing too, because they're like, have you done this or have you done that? And because we all fall a confirmation bias and our own experiences, I'm like, I didn't think about that at all.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And maybe I wouldn't have thought about it in like 1,000 years. So I love getting people's perspectives. At 360i, we had something we created called the Content Jams.
Oh. And
we'd bring in literally anyone. And like, it doesn't matter. You could have been in finance. You could have been part of the janitorial staff. Like, we'd bring people in and just come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. And those were some of the best pieces of content that we were able to get. Of course, when they were creating content in those jams, that it came to like Coca-Cola or Oreo or anything like that, maybe it wasn't always on voice. But that was my job then. Like, it was a good idea and then to the voice, because we just sit around as marketers and be like thinking of the same stuff over and over.
Right. And you kind of get into a mode where you're kind of saturated. And so it's so important. And I love like that you guys did that and that you had your classes. I mean, that's phenomenal, because they're coming in from a different perspective and experience, and that you're able to kind of see, okay, you see it from this lens when I feel like I'm kind of in the thick of it, you know, in the weeds, and you're able to kind of bring things to light, and you're like, wow, I had no idea that this was even, you know, something we could possibly bring forward. And so I think that's brilliant. And I love that. I love the, you know, the aspect of coming in from different backgrounds together. And that's where new ideas come forward. Because I think if we stay in our own lane, then in our own group, we kind of talk about the same thing.
Well, yeah. So writing for Oreo for 3 years, like there were times when I'm like, I would sit down to write and I'm like, I've said pretty much everything and anything you could ever say about Oreo cookies. I just, I can't think of anything else. So those content jams were really, really, really impactful for me, for the other writing staff and any social media community manager on other brands too.
What was your favorite thing to write? Like, was there something that you're kind of like, because, from those content jams?
Yeah.
Like, that you were just
From the content jams? I can't think of anything from specifically that came through from a content jam right now, but one of my favorite pieces of content was written by Eric Tsai, who's been my partner on many, many things on Oreo. We work together at XBeyond. We work together at Sysmos. He's just a fantastic friend and colleague. Our favorite post on Oreo is Truth or Dare. That's it. It took forever for us to get it approved. So every single time we'd submit it, they'd be like, no, the client, right? It would be like, no, we're not doing that. And then we'd get a new brand manager. And then Eric and I were like, all right, we're going to put it in now. Like, we're going to get it approved now. They'd be like, nope. And so we got the same brand manager that we worked with on the Oreo Blackout Suite finally was like, yeah.
Cool.
We posted it and it did the best for that particular month. And it was just Truth or Dare. And everyone was like, truth, there. It was so much fun. It's actually one of my favorites again, because it took so hard. It took us months, if not a year, to get it approved. So
that is amazing. I would have not thought that would be it would take so long. I mean, it just is ingenious.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, it's interesting that with that simple kind of a question approach, you're seeing Twitter doing that now on their platform, kind of saying, you know, tweet or just very simple, very direct. I mean, it's, everyone loves it. So you guys were so ahead of the game there.
100%. And that post could be attacked now and even back then, because maybe it didn't help build brand equity or value or anything like that, right? Even though it did, right? Because it was a fun post and now it's part of Oreo's Oreo cookies. I got to say it right. I was right. Oreo cookies persona. But we were also always thinking about the algorithm though too, because we knew that if we would get a lot of engagement in this one, next time we posted something about the brand, we're going to get a heck of a lot more engagement than ever before. So
yeah, I mean, but, you know, I would also say, too, like, I would say that you're probably going to probably see more of that. What you guys started, you know, with Oreo cookies, making sure that I'm on brand, too.
Really kind of goes off my head.
Right. It really kind of sparked a movie, because I can show, like, the two brands that I saw, like, this week past week at Cannes Lions that, like, literally were kind of pushing the envelopes in terms of what they were doing on social, kind of like what you guys were doing with Oreo cookies, was Dunkin' Donuts, well, now Dunkin'. And Burger King, Burger King like was really pushing the envelope.
Well, Burger King's killing it.
Oh my gosh! I at first, what was bad about seeing that presentation like right before lunch? I was like, now I'm hungry for a Whopper, and they just said that the closest Burger King is 9 hours away.
Oh wow!
I was like, oh, you guys should have had Burger King.
Yeah, just passing them out.
Right. Yeah. So. No, but those are two brands that are really kind of embracing what you guys started off with, you know, with Oreo.
That's amazing. And ultimately, it's all about just being human and having fun and engaging. And that's the beauty of it. And this is why I love what we do. Like, it's just having fun. It's just engaging at scale.
Yeah, definitely. I love having fun. I love learning new things and meeting people too. And I think that that's something that I've really been passionate about too, is making these connections online and then finally meeting in real life. And that's how we connected. And I'm trying to remember when we first connected on social, but it was really last October that you finally came out to Louisville for a great speaking engagement. We were at the same conference, and just really, like, I love how social brings us together. And as you said, making these human connections, and some of the people that I know to this day were first I met on social, and they're becoming like seriously the best friends that I've had, you know, in my life. So it's just amazing.
No, social media is such an amazing tool I always feel lucky to be alive when we are now, just to be able to do this right now.
Yeah. Like,
you know, running a podcast, having a mic and being able mm-hmm. to do it. Like, this didn't exist 10 years ago. Not really. No. You know what I mean? Like, sure, there was some like Ustream technologies and things like that, but like nowhere near what it is today.
Nowhere near. No, and I think too, even 10 years ago, social, I mean, I can tell you when I was in a doctoral program at Tennessee, I was told on a regular basis what I was doing was a fad. It would go away. I'd never get a job teaching school. I would never get promoted or get a name for myself doing this field. I feel, you know, sometimes you just have to kind of go for you know, like your gut and just listen to it and just see how you can kind of take advantage of these opportunities. And just, you know, I'm very grateful that when it, as I said earlier, when everyone was coming going here, I was like, okay, I'm going to go over there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's, you know, in some ways risky, you know, you kind of have to play your cards and say, okay, am I going so far? Like, but if I believe in human connections and kind of where I feel that the field is going, sure. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I love what we're doing. I love teaching. It's people complain sometimes that it's so hard to keep up, but I mean, you're constantly learning. I would be really bored if I was doing the same thing every day and every year. So that's not fun.
Not at all. No, I earlier in my career, I'd get asked like, oh, so did you go to, you have to go to college for that? When are you getting a real job? Like,
No, I mean, even with some, like what's interesting is even some of the platforms, like in the most recent talks that I've had over the last couple of years, they're really surprised that there are social media classes that are being taught at universities. And I've had to correct them and say, well, there's actually programs, there's master's programs, there's undergrad programs, there's certifications, like we're here. And, but yeah, I remember talking to people, they're like, oh, you teach a class in social. That's a thing, right?
That's cute.
Oh, I love the ones that's easy.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. I've been told that. I'm like, trying to change your curriculum every semester, like literally like when the change happens.
That's easy.
Yeah, learn new tools, learn new things on about Facebook Blueprint. Like, make sure that you don't cover Meerkat unless it's now a reference. You know, so yeah, easy.
Yeah, right. No, because it's easy because everyone does it. Right, everyone's in social media. What I mean by that, but I always compare it to like a car. Like, most people drive. Right, most people know how to drive pretty well. They know how to. It's pretty easy to drive. Right. Don't ask me how to make a car. Don't ask me how to sell a car. Don't ask me how to fix my car. Does anybody know any of that?
Right.
And then you're like,
that is a really, really good point.
Yeah. They're like, oh, well, I don't know any of that. I'm like, the same thing for social media. Everyone knows how to log on, post a photo, but do you know how to do it from a business perspective? Do you know how to do it consistently? Yeah. Do you know how to do it correctly, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. And are you willing to kind of explore the back end, you know, like the coding and just figure out, okay, why did this work? How did this work? Is this something we can repeat and be able to kind of be in the foresight to understand what could come up next and how could we kind of push the envelope a little bit? So there's so many, I love like the analogy that you point out because it's so important to have like a comprehensive viewpoint. But yeah, I mean, and I think too, like with your talk, like related to influencer marketing that you gave earlier this month, you talked about the fake followers. Like there's a lot of ways to artificially, amplify your influence and create the illusion that you are top of your game. And it's sad because it kind of deters away from people who really are experts and who really are people that know the back and front ends of social. And so it's in many ways, I think it's getting better, but it's still kind of an epidemic in our field where it really is kind of hurting a lot of things.
No, certainly. And truthfully, it's so easy. Like I've done research on buying followers, all that kind of good stuff. I've bought followers for like fake profiles so I could test and I could learn about them. Like for like $5, you get thousands of likes on your Facebook posts. You get it on your Facebook profile. Like it's just so tempting too. Like I'm like, oh, you know, I really want to hit that 5,000 mark. Here's $5. So, but it is a major problem. People are wasting money. People are fraudsters, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really hurting the brands. It's hurting themselves because the people that are doing it really are not in it for the long game. And if they are in it for the long game, that's not going to help them.
Right. And I think what you've done that I really like about your approach, Leo, is that you've stayed authentic. And so you've stayed true. And you can see with each of your platforms, have you grown, you know, naturally over the course. And so it's, and I think so there's so many tools out there now, I think, that basically allow you to see, okay, how many percent of your followers are fake, or what was your kind of follower count? Like, it did it jump up exponentially, you know? And so what I've always tried to do is try to clean out the bots. I mean, it's kind of hard to do that, but just systematically, I don't want to give people the illusion that, like, oh, you have this many followers. It's like, you know, like, so many people like that are bots, you know, follow me, because what am I going to do at the end of the day? Oh yeah, sure, I get, you know, X amount of thousand followers, but it's like,
sure,
and it doesn't really turn that well, and it kind of hurts your credibility if people know that that's what you did, you know, to get where you were at. So
yeah, 100%. And also, like, those followers could be real, but are they the audiences that you want to reach as a brand, as someone right. participating with this particular influencer? You might want to find someone who's in Louisville. Mm-hmm. I got it. Back a little bit. I should have some bourbon in this to say it correctly. So, yeah, you might like, all right, cool. We found this follower. He or she is local and they have 5,000, whatever, let's say 55,000 followers. But maybe their followers are in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or their followers are not bourbon drinkers, or their followers are the wrong demographic or psychographic. So it's also important for brands to, like, understand maybe they do have a lot of followers and they're all real. But are they your audience?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is always interesting. And I think one of the things that I wish that some of the social media platforms would do would be to help, you know, really kind of be more transparent on the verification, you know, protocol. Because I know, well, you know, Twitter, of course, they've kind of paused their verification process. But I wish that there was a way for people to kind of get through verification, but also kind of do a little bit more bot control, like, basically. Right. Kind of say, okay, here's all the fake followers, you go away, and then really kind of focus on quality. And I do think that there's been some speakers in our industry who've said, oh yeah, buy followers to get your name in the game, and then, you know, don't do it anymore. It's like, when I heard that, I was like, oh my god, no.
Yeah.
You know, I do a debrief with my students, I'm like, don't do that. But no, I mean, I think there needs to be a message of quality versus, you know, over quantity. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, no, 100%. You know, I want to go back before I forget to kind of changing the subject a tiny bit. Gary Vaynerchuk, you had a chance to meet him.
I did, yes. Yeah.
Your trip to France.
I did, yes. I feel like I was kind of a fangirl.
Of course. No, he's also a Jersey native.
Yeah. He's in Jersey. And so I have been connected with Gary for about 10 years on Twitter. And I remember when he was launching his first couple of books, and I had a chance to review one of them. It was the Ask Gary V, because it was his show. And I've tried to engage with him, of course, on Twitter, and we've been able to have a conversation. And but I never saw him speak, like, in person, just because he was all over the place and never really local, you know, for me.
Yeah.
In Louisville. But then I saw he was speaking at Cannes, and I thought, okay, this needs to happen. I need to
make it happen now.
So, I was able to go there, and I actually met his videographer, David Rock, or D Rock.
Okay.
And I was able to help him actually get a seat in the front row. I was like, hey.
Oh.
Well, because everyone was sitting down and there was a lot of people at the session, and everyone wanted to be, of course, right up front, but I was sitting off to the side, and David came by with his big camera, and I knew who he was. And so he was actually asking a few people if they would, you know, let him, you know, switch seats, because he had something in the back. And, you know, there were a few people that were like, no, I'm here. And I just was like, guys, like, you know, this is D-Rock, you know? So I said, hey, like, let me move over, you know, so you can have my spot. And he was like, sure. Like, no, I mean, you're doing content, like, totally. Yeah. So that actually helped me get the chance to talk to Gary. So Gary did a talk, honest, very transparent, very Gary. But I was tweeting with him back and forth. I'm like, hey, I'm really excited to see him in person. He's like, well, yeah, let's definitely hug afterwards. And so for me, like, I was okay, calm down, Karen. Like, keep it cool.
Yeah. That was I was super excited. I was excited for you. I was excited in general. I think I woke up and I was just laying in bed like, oh man.
Yeah, it was really cool. So there was a lot of people that went to him. And so I was actually in line. But what happened, because as I mentioned with David, like, he was kind of behind me video, but he was kind of pushing me up near the front, just kind of helping me kind of get there to see Gary. So I thought that was cool. But we had a great brief conversation. I thanked him for kind of all the videos that he was able to do, kind of I could bring to the table. So, but yeah, I asked if we got a selfie and we got a hug. it was really cool.
That is amazing.
But it was interesting kind of the feedback that I got. Some people were just like freaking out. Like he has a huge fan base in Louisville. So they were like,
yeah.
But I also got a lot of people that were kind of like, you know, commenting what he was wearing. He's like, he wore that at Cannes. And Cannes, you know, I mean, if you wear a suit at Cannes, you're like standing out, like a full on tie and everything.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's a French Riviera. So it's kind of like flip flops and a baseball cap. That's kind of not like uncommon. I saw executives like and presidents of agencies walking around in, you know, beach shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, so I had to kind of, I didn't do crisis management at that point for Gary, but I just had to kind of explain like, this is normal at Cannes. Like,
yeah, plus that's who he is.
Right. Yeah. And he does his own thing. So,
yeah. Cause I actually look at it. This is a conversation I have with a lot of folks. I like wearing suits.
Yeah.
I like wearing ties and that's who I am. And I know that sometimes when I walk into a room or a presentation, someone might be like, why is Leo wearing a suit or tie? This isn't for him. And the way I think about it is that ultimately I want to judge someone on their personality and the quality of what they're doing. And I hope that's how people are treating me too, even though I know it's not always the case really, but I want to be me and wearing a suit. You've seen me many times. I'm wearing a suit and a tie and like, so I look at it from the opposite direction. I'm like, be you.
Yeah.
Whatever makes you comfortable.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel too that, I mean, I'm really glad that you raised that because that was something that I really kind of, I would say, struggled with, you know, when I first started teaching is kind of, I felt that I had to be like every other professor, not with like the tweed jacket with elbow patches or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really kind of, I had my first semester in which was by far like in the 10 plus years I've been teaching was like the worst evaluations I ever got. I mean, I tried to be someone I wasn't. And at that point, I'm like, you know what?
It doesn't work.
Like, no. I'm like, I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to approach. So what I try to do is kind of reflect that in my style as well when I'm teaching. But yeah, I'm like you, like when it comes to presentations, I do still wear suits, but I've always tried to be something where I'm like, okay, conscious of branding. Like I try to wear clothes that I feel like, okay, you know, are kind of part of my brand. So I love maroon, like my website, my blog, I've always loved the color maroon, but if I'm representing Louisville, for example, I always try to tap in and use some sort of red, just like, not like red, like in your face, but just something that kind of subtly says, okay, you know, on brand. But yeah, I do feel like too, you kind of want to, you know, give respect to where you're going.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of academic conferences of people wearing, you know, flip flops, you know, there.
No. I would never wear shorts or flip flops. Those are on my no list.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm like, no. So yeah, I mean, I kind of, yeah, I have my do's and don'ts. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel you're never going to get in trouble for being overdressed.
Agreed.
I mean, but you will get in trouble if you're underdressed.
Yeah. Plus I'm like, I have all these ties. I need to wear them.
Now, here's a question. Ties or bow ties?
Ties.
Ties.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not against the bow tie by any means. I've not learned to tie one yet. My old boss, Matt Wurst at 360i, always wears one. He knows how to tie it really, really well. So I need to, when I get back to New York, I need to get some lessons from him.
Yeah, it's like one-on-one. Well, also, you know, West Virginia's president, Gordon Gee, is like, I don't know how many bow ties he has, but that's his signature. So
yeah, it's fun, right? It's cool. Yeah. And you've seen some of my ties are like floral. I have like pink ones and I try to like stick out a little bit.
Yeah, but no, I think that what you do is great. You know, it's always like on brand too. And like you're able, not only with the great content that you're able to share during your talks, but you're able to kind of, you know, as you said, stand out and, you know, go and separate yourself from the speakers. And I know, I mean, you really did stand out like at the Louisville Digital Association, because as you said, you're there with a suit. Like I really don't remember anyone else wearing a suit.
Yeah, exactly. Or even if actually the good part is hopefully as we're talking about this, maybe you and the audience wouldn't remember that I was wearing a suit period. Mm-hmm. Right. And just remember the content. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hope ultimately happens. But
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like, I think what you've done is the best of both worlds. They remember you, but they also remember, you know, the content. And so,
yeah.
And I think the speakers that get that, they understand that you want to make a memorable impression, because there's been a lot of talks where I've been to, I'm like, I think we went over this, but I don't really know who's, you know, like,
yeah, they said it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
People forget that speaking and public speaking is a totally different discipline.
Oh, absolutely.
Just because you're good at either marketing, doctor, or whatever it may be, speaking, it's almost like it could be its own job.
Oh my
gosh. I mean, it is. I mean, stand-up comedians and presenters and...
It's, yeah, no, and that's, you asked earlier about the speaking, like whether it increased after my book or before. And one of the things that by going to more industry conferences, I've realized is I realized in the back of my head, like, okay, I need to revisit my speaking approaches because one, I would say, you know, challenge that I have is I'm a very wordy person and that comes across on my slides. So what I've tried to do is be more visual in my talks to kind of illustrate some of these things. So I've tried to kind of do more like with visuals and less text. Not like, but you have the standard though, Leah, for like great visual text. And like when I was in Canada, kind of side note on that, I saw the Duncan.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And literally I'm like, this is like so up Leah's alley in terms of their approach because they were exactly doing the same
thing. Yeah. That's not my personal approach. That's not unique. It's called the Lessing style of presentation, where the, I forgot, he's a Stanford professor, I believe. He does it, and you should see him do it. Like, I'll share a video. But basically, he'll have like 1,000 slides and get through them in like 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
So today we're going to show you about this cool, new, awesome thing, and like click, 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 click. Like,
wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, well, so it inspired me.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to like, I would say that it was very unique for me to see that because that's been the one, like you've been like one of the speakers that like has stood out in using that approach. Because I mean, if you go to some of the academic conferences, you're like looking at 10 and you're like, oh my gosh. Or the worst is they're using clip art or just sound effects. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so 1990s. Like this is not where you go retro here.
So, agreed.
Yeah, but yeah. So, I mean, visual is very, very important. But I love, too, how you've always featured truth. I mean, that's like...
I try to put her in. I try to have, like, little inside jokes. I put my friends in presentations and things like that.
Awesome. No, I think it's great. I think it's great.
What's funny, though, actually, when I first started speaking, I remember doing that, sharing my presentation with the specific event coordinator. And they're like, when are you going to send me the real one?
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, well, you can't present this. Like, this is unprofessional.
No.
Yeah. So they kept calling it unprofessional because I, as you know, I use GIFs, I use pictures of my dog and things like that. But I think, and I'm happy I went against it still. Like, I was like, no, this is, you'll see like what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to present. And
yeah.
Thing to it. And I'm happy I was able to do it and stuck to my guns.
Oh, I'm so glad that you did because, yeah, I mean, your presentations have always been so entertaining and memorable. And I mean, there's just some that you kind of want to see the life going on. It's just, it's like kind of just very generic, very blah. And 100%. I feel that we need more entertainment, you know, to kind of start the conversation, to get inspired. And so, yeah, I'm glad that you stuck to your guns. But yeah, I've been told a lot of different things in my career about my approaches. They're like, unprofessional to, you know, not like, or not academic enough. I'm like, well, thank God.
Yeah. Thank God. So. Well, I think it's just then it's us as marketers, as people, as professionals, then to understand like what's our audience and who's not, and things like that. Cause I've actually had many people tell me the podcast is boring. Like they've just straight out been like, this is a boring podcast. Why is it 2 hours? Why do you talk for like 5 hours with someone? I'm like, then you're not the right audience. Or maybe you're just, you don't really understand the concept of podcasting where it's just on demand. Like you can listen to it 30 minutes on the way to work and then 30 minutes while on lunch. You know what I mean? So it's not like you're sitting there listening to this whole podcast.
Right. You're usually doing something else or you could be working out. Like I have a lot of students and I'd love to, you know, like ask you about this because I know that you've been really good at this is, you know, like they, you know, do this while working out or traveling and stuff. And like, I know that you've been using a lot of audio feedback for your classes. And that is something that I haven't done yet, but I love like the idea of doing that because as you said, like this allows you to kind of give people one, some feedback in a way that is consumable. They could be doing something else, but also you get to hear your voice. So you're like, oh, okay, this is, you know, my professor sharing and personalizing it. So that's great.
Yeah, the subtext, right? How important subtext doesn't come through really texts, any kind of texts, right? Like unless we're using emojis and really explaining ourselves, like, and that's a waste of time and just not as efficient as hearing my voice. Like, that was awesome. That's great. You know, well, you know what? I didn't like this, but I like what you did here. If I would have wrote, I didn't like this, someone might just focus on, I didn't like this. He didn't like it. You know what I mean? Maybe he's being a jerk. Mm-hmm. I was being curt. I was trying to be, you know, short. And audio has just been amazing, being able to connect with folks. And there are some students that don't like it. And actually, after posting in your in the community, basically, I had so much amazing feedback. I didn't think about like the process to getting it done. For me, it was easy because I have all this equipment.
Yeah.
But I'm learning so much, and I'm looking to improve on my learnings and share that too with the community soon.
Awesome. Well, I also, you know, love the fact that you mentioned emojis. Like, I love emojis, and I remember that was something too that some of my colleagues, like, I would use emojis in my emails. Like, I always loved the little blushing happy face, like,
oh, yeah,
the emoji. But I've had a few people say, you know, Karen, that's not necessarily professional. You can't have emojis in emails. I'm like, well, where is it written? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Well, written that you can't do that. So then I'm like, okay, swipe. You know, like, ignore that. But I love emojis because it gives you, like, I feel it's a visual representation of, like, your personality. You get to see how people are thinking, but you also get to see a little bit of their personality. Where, I mean, I have a friend, Goldie, like, she has neon green hair, but she uses only green emojis. And so for me,
I love that. That's great.
Yeah. And I know that you have your, you know, the puppy emoji. And
yeah, he's the pizza heart.
Yeah. Can you explain that? Like, how that, like, is that your emoji brand?
I'm trying to make it my signature, like, response. I always put, like, a pizza, a heart, the 100, and the dog. And then maybe I throw something in there.
Like, I've seen a flex arm, too.
Yeah, I do that, too. I just try to make it fun. Just I'm responding back, and I feel like I want to add something. And then also, even from a marketing perspective, my comment will stick out more than someone else's that doesn't have all those emojis in it, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, whenever we've gone back and forth, like, with messages, you always do that. And so I'm like, one of these days I need to ask Leo about. And so, yeah, because I remember one assignment, like, that I've tried to do with my students is to introduce themselves on Twitter only using emojis to kind of see.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
Yeah. So some of them have been like, you know, like, well, I like the dancing, you know, lady one because I'm, like, energetic. And
yeah,
they would actually have to kind of explain to the class in the next class what their emoji kind of trail, you know, means. And so when I was trying to do that, it's been a few years since then, you know, they've updated their emojis, you know, so I had coffee, I had the plane, travel,
nice.
I had, of course, a dog and a cat. And I'm trying to think what else. I think that was when they also launched the professor emoji. So I'm like,
of course.
One thing with Apple, though, is they have not given, of course, the properly sized coffee emoji. That little coffee emoji, I'm like, no, that's not a real cup. That's like a taste. Like, full on venting. Like,
agreed. I'm in full agreement. We should start a movement. Let's start a campaign.
Well, I definitely think we both need to be, like, use our influence to be sponsored by a coffee company. Like,
That'd be amazing. That, please. Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts, look, come on.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And it's a New Jersey Dunkin' Donuts cup.
Well, I did with, speaking of Dunkin', at Can, they actually created a one-day coffee rosé.
Yeah, I saw you post about that. How was it?
It was different, you know, but I would say that the thing that I I'm not much of a drinker, so I'm like, okay, rosé, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was coffee rosé, so, I mean, I felt obligated as part
of... Sure, no, you have to, right?
Coffee, you know, and it was an experiment. Yeah. I wanted to try it out, but yeah, it was actually not bad. I would say the rosé tastes like rosé, but what you did get in terms of coffee was like the coffee smell. So when you you were like, you got this coffee with, and you're like, okay, I smell the coffee. So I don't know if it's something with the can inside and then just, but yeah, it was different.
So it was more of a rosé with a hint of coffee. More alcohol than coffee, not more coffee than alcohol. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was definitely more alcohol than coffee. But I think what they wanted to do is not mess up the rosé too much.
Yeah. Cause that has to be like the right balance, right? You can, I feel like you can mess that up easily.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Well, but yeah, I never saw so many people run so fast from rosé. I mean, it was like in this big, like their talk was in this big theater, and literally there were people like running out, trying to grab it.
You wow.
One, but they were like, you know, just grabbing
just going as crazy. Much as they
could. Yeah, people, what they do with rosé, but then I'm thinking, well, if that was, you know, coffee, then yeah.
Sure, yeah. It was a cool can too, I remember.
Yeah, it was,
It's like a Red Bull-y kind of size, like the same shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Red Bull.
They had my coffee. Yeah, so they really did a great job. Yeah, and it had the colors, it had the font. It resonated with people, you know, and so people were kind of like all, just opening up, trying it out. And so what I wanted to try to do too is kind of take pictures, you know, to kind of demonstrate, okay, let's see, you know, which ones could be Instagrammable, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think they did. They did create an experience and a memory, you know? So, and I think that's kind of the ultimate goal that they wanted to have at the festival.
That's awesome. Yeah. I did see a bunch of other people post about it too. So it was definitely a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there were a lot of hits. Yeah. There were a lot of hits. But yeah, every brand, I think too, when you're at a festival of that global scale, like you're always trying to kind of stand out somehow on social. And so there were some that were able to stand out more than others, but,
sure.
Then I think Fox had some sort of sunscreen product.
I saw that. I thought it was something else. I was going to comment on it. I thought it was a different product. I forgot what I thought it was. Like, I thought it was like mayo or something.
I don't know. Well, I didn't see that because what's interesting is that along the beach on the French Riviera, like you had all of these different brands setting up their own shops. You know, you had Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and et cetera. But some were like invite only. So I thought the coolest spot, you know, like basically everyone said, oh, this was so cool, was Spotify. I mean, Spotify had a massive stage, but... Sure. Was only invite only. So it would be really cool to go. But you would have appreciated this at Twitter though, Leah. They had a game of they had a throne of tags or something. Like they actually
I saw that you took a picture with it too, right?
Oh, I had to. I literally
that was awesome.
I geeked out because it had all of the hashtags of all the characters. And I know you and I have like gone back and forth with the Game of Thrones, but I saw that and I literally was like, done. I need a picture. Like this is But it would have been perfect if we had Truth there because I know that you.
Oh yeah, well she was live tweeting. Oh, I was live tweeting as her during the season finale.
Yeah, that was amazing. Oh yeah, Game of Thrones.
That's a whole other podcast for us to talk for like five hours.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, no, like yeah, Game of Thrones. Yeah, just the emotions, just everything. Yeah, what a season.
So before I let you go, I wanted to ask. Kind of all the questions I get from students, or most of the questions, the most popular questions I get from students.
That's awesome.
To see, or at least the two most popular. One is, what can they do to stick out now as they enter the working world?
Okay. So I would say the big thing that I would have the students focus on is one, really kind of taking a moment to do some self-reflection and kind of see who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really that self-reflection and understanding who you are, what you have to offer, what experiences make you different, what type of, you know, things can you offer? I do think that we sometimes have to kind of hit the pause button before jumping in, you know, in the industry to kind of do some self-reflection and kind of see what are your goals, what are the things that you're very passionate about, and also what are some non-negotiables for you. And I've had this conversation a lot with students when it comes to jobs, saying that for me, when I was looking at positions, culture was huge. Like being able to grow and foster and be able to continue the work that I wanted to do was so important. And I knew that there were certain universities that would never allow me to be the professor I am today. I didn't fit in their traditional model of what it means to be a professor. So I have the students actually do kind of a self-reflection kind of exercise, kind of analyzing their personal brand, where they see themselves and also what they want to go. So I think that's the first thing. The second is really kind of figuring out how to best tell your story because no one else is going to be there to tell it better than you and really kind of own that content and figure out what platforms you can share your story, what you can offer. And then the third one is be persistent, be resilient, and you're going to.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, you're going to be hearing a lot of no's, but some people say, "Well, no, it is not yet." But I also feel no means that's only one pathway you can go, one view, or that's one perspective. But I feel too, anytime you're being told what you can't do, that means. You can use that as motivation to say, no, I can, and watch me. And I took that as a lesson from track on what we could and could not do as student athletes. I'm like, hey, well, you tell me that I can't do this, watch me. And I think too, you know, the last point is take risks. I don't think that students are taking, they are kind of in this bubble where they're in this box because they feel like this is what I have to do as part of my program, or this is what people expect me. break those boxes, but take a risk, you know, and kind of say, you know what, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to learn from the experience. And failure, one lesson that we learned this past week is failure is still a lesson. And the worst thing you can do is have regret for not trying something or not taking initiative. And just, I feel with students, if you're passionate about, let's say, working for a company like Burger King or Weed and Kennedy, like both won serious awards here, you know, at Cannes, like you have that as a goal. Have that as a motivation. And so be thinking about what are some of the risks you can, you know, take that you can learn from and that can help you grow. I mean, the ultimate goal is to grow as an individual, not kind of stay in this little circle and keep doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. How can you push yourself? And the way to do that is to take risks and put yourself out of your comfort zone and learn from the experience. And I would say too, I'd like the students to know that there's always people out there to help. And I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. So if they ever come to me and say, you know what, I'm interested in this field, what can I do? There's, you know, always going to be someone on the other line like me. Mm-hmm. And help, you know, advice, because the biggest thing is we need to prepare and give our future generation the best step forward.
Amazing. Those are fantastic answers, and I couldn't agree more. The second one is, what do you think of unpaid internships versus paid internships? I get that a lot now too.
Yeah. Well, I know in the PR field, the PR council just said that all internships have to be paid. And so I would say that what you would want to do is definitely go for those that are valuable. But I also feel too that you have to look at each of the quote paid. I think we have to kind of look at exactly what does paid exactly mean.
That's true.
Payment is, yeah, financially, like, yeah, you know, if you need to eat and have a place to live, that, yes, that is very important. But I also think too, and I'm going to use an example that I share with my students, payment, you know, is the experience and story, like, you legitimately can use to basically get your dream
value. Yeah.
So I have a few students for the last 5 years have interned with the Kentucky Derby. And so that is a week of work. That's not paid in the traditional sense, but what is that they get exclusive pass, they get their parking paid for, they get free food while they're at the event. They get to create and be part of a brand, a global event, and they're able to, you know, save all of the work that they've done to use in their portfolio. So while it's unpaid from the traditional sense, my students, all of the students that have worked with the Kentucky Derby got like a job or their dream internship like immediately afterwards. And so that's kind of where I don't see paid, unpaid as kind of a black or white. I feel like, well, there's a lot of gray in the middle, because you have to kind of look at what payment is. Would you want to do, you know, the Kentucky Derby unpaid internship for the entire year? If you are paying your own way, it might not necessarily be the best option, but there's always room to kind of do something else.
Yeah.
If you want to pursue that. I think, so that would be my question is kind of, yes, you know, ideally you would like to get paid, but look at what you get out of the unpaid internship. It might be something, the experience and the networking and the connections.
Love it.
Will get you to the next level and make connections that will be paying you a whole lot more than you would.
Sure. Have. Yeah. Payment is always not always monetary, right? It's not always a piece of paper.
No, I mean, my internships, my South Africa internship was unpaid. I was going to school. My SC experience was, you know, basically my tuition. And so a lot of my internships that I had were unpaid. And, but I felt with those experiences that helped me kind of cross over. Yeah. And that was with speaking too. Like I get those questions a lot from, you know, young professionals who want to get into the speaking realm. And I've told them, well, sometimes you have to speak for free, you know, like to get your, you know, name out there. And then once you do, then you can kind of start putting a price tag on certain workshops and stuff like that. So but you have to have that experience.
Yeah, you have to build it somehow.
So a lot of students are like, well, I want to be paid, you know, like $45,000 to talk. I'm like, well, I would too, but
yeah.
Not happening, you know. So, so just kind of you have to, you know, build the solid foundations and then grow. And I think kind of having benchmarks, you know, too, is having a progression. Like if you want an internship, here's an unpaid internship, or here's one.
Have a plan.
Yeah, you got to have a plan in place. It's all about planning and forecasting.
I love it. I still joke that I'll talk for pizza. Just give me pizza.
Pizza.
I'll be happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been people that have said, oh, Karen, we have this conference. Actually, side note, like, there was a conference in Florida that they knew my love for coffee. And so they, like, they actually had, like, this personalized.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean.
That's awesome.
It was a beautiful thing. I think I drank most of it. Yeah, yeah, things you could put in your coffee, like chocolate and stuff. And so,
wow, I've never, this is awesome.
Oh, I know. It was, yeah, I did not get paid for that, but I basically.
Oh, that's amazing.
I think I consumed enough coffee for them to say, yeah, we paid her.
So. That's enough payment, yeah.
That's enough payment. Yeah, she kind of, you know, got the coffee drained, but yeah, I'll speak for coffee. But yeah, I mean, it was really like my time. I did some paid speaking engagements at Tennessee, but a lot, you know, to start off with, we were unpaid. So
yeah, same. So thank you. If anybody wanted to reach out and connect with you, buy your book, all that kind of good stuff, ask for advice, what's the best way? Website, social media?
Yeah, so my website is just KarenFreeberg.com and my blog is KarenFreeberg.com/blog. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, usually just with the, you know, K Freeberg handle. But yeah, with my book.
You do have a hashtag though.
Yeah, I do. Yes. I do have a hashtag for my classes. I do have one for whenever I'm talking about coffee. So yeah, Duncan needs to sponsor me definitely for that. But I'm that's a goal.
What is the hashtag?
This prof runs on coffee.
Love it.
Yeah. But yeah, my book, you can get it there. It's on Kindle. So if you want to, you know, an electronic book version of it, it's available. So it's titled Social Media for Strategic Communications, Social Media for Strategic Communications, Creative Applications and Creative Strategies and Real World Applications. So.
Love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for being a friend, a colleague, for being on the podcast. Our friendship means a lot. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Leo. No, I mean, you've been the best and I'm honored and really excited and thank you again.
Of course. Like I said, I don't know how to end these, so I'm just going to say bye.